From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Governor Rauner is firing back at the Pritzker campaign tonight after a flare-up over an avowed Nazi running for Congress in Illinois as a Republican.
Should Arthur Jones drop out of this race?
Yes, and I said so immediately. This is another lie from the Pritzker camp. The guy can't run on the truth because the truth is so bad for him. That guy has no place in the ballot. We tried to kick him off. I called him to get out, and he should be out.
Sam McCann will run as a Conservative Party candidate. Libertarian candidate Grayson Cash Jackson will face Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic businessman J.B. Pritzker. McCann called on his rivals today to schedule debates between the candidates. Pritzker said he will participate in three debates. Governor Rauner and Cash Jackson have yet to confirm.
Champaign-Urbana is wonderful, but it's very hard to keep a company of more than six people there. There's no convenient transportation, not much of a workforce, and it's very hard.
Does this make up for your comments on WGN?
This doesn't make up for it. I apologize because I didn't choose my words well. I was talking very inartfully about the challenges smaller communities have sometimes relative to luck.
Governor Rauner boards a city bus for an apology tour of Illinois' flagship college town. Illinois Nazis are back in the news, and it's official. There will be at least four party candidates on the ballot for governor this fall. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Sean Crawford is away. With me in studio on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield are Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois and a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer, Daisy Contreras, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter, and joining us by phone is Mark Maxwell. He's Capitol Bureau Chief for WCIA-TV, an affiliate of the Columbia Broadcasting System, serving Springfield, Decatur, and Urbana-Champaign. Mark, welcome to the program.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Let's begin with the apology tour. Governor Rauner made some comments on WGN radio a couple of weeks ago, late June. Daisy, can you remind us? We heard a little bit at the top of the show, but can you remind us what did he say, Daisy?
Yeah, so Rauner blamed the University of Illinois for not being able to retain its grads, many who have founded companies near California, Silicon Valley now. He placed this blame on Champaign-Urbana, saying that it's hard to keep a company of more than six people there due to, and according to him, to a lack of convenient transportation, a lack of a workforce, which drew ire from many in the area, from lawmakers to people in the community. And like you said, Brian, later, the governor said his words were taken out of context, and this week he began his so-called apology tour in Urbana-Champaign.
Yeah, and I mean, the U of I is known for some, you know, pretty famous tech companies that have been started by graduates. I think PayPal is one that's often mentioned. I think I actually might have lived in the dorm with the guys who founded Yelp at one point. Didn't know them personally. But Mark, you were there as the governor showed up in Champaign-Urbana this week. Can you tell us what was that like?
Well, it was one of the more memorable moments I can remember from covering this governor at all, because it really was a testament to the pride that the people of Champaign-Urbana feel about themselves, about their workforce, about their city, about the university. I call it a grassroots fact check in real time, so to speak, because it just so happened that on a Wednesday night when the governor was staying, or a Tuesday night, I believe it was, staying overnight in Washington, D.C., and we first sort of discovered these comments that were online and started asking questions to the governor. What did you mean when you said that Champaign-Urbana has, quote, not much of a workforce and can't keep a company of more than six people? Well, on that night, the mayors of Champaign and Urbana and the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce and a whole bunch of business development folk were also in Washington, D.C. And so as fate would have it, the governor had to face his own comments face-to-face from the mayors that night. And I think that stroke of luck, if we can call it that, also helped to precipitate the governor's apology, because I've talked to a lot of reporters and different political observers and people in the State House. And Brian, I can't find anybody who tells me that they've seen the governor so quickly apologize for something that he said like that. But it really forced him to face his own words and meet with several of the different companies and who in their by their existence, prove the governor's comments were false.
And he has, these are companies he has visited. I mean, he's done press events. I saw that in the Champaign News Gazette, Tom Kasich, a columnist there, listed off some of the press events that he has done as governor in the past few years at Champaign Urbana cities.
And that was part of, I think, if we're putting the governor's, if we're giving him the full benefit of the doubt and putting his comments in the context that I think he was trying to say, it was that some of those companies you listed off, like iTunes and YouTube and Tesla Motors, some of their founders and co-founders, you know, came from U of I. They just so happened to settle at a place called Silicon Valley, which I think that was sort of established long before as sort of a haven for tech startups and companies, long before the governor ever came to Illinois. And he was sort of pointing to a larger problem and sort of awkwardly comparing Champaign to Chicago, Champaign to Silicon Valley. And the governor obviously regrets those remarks now. But the interesting thing is that Champaign happens to be the fastest growing city in the entire state with jobs, with population. And so it's really a bright spot. And I think he learned that lesson over the week.
Charlie, well, and it was also interesting that he talked about the transportation because, in fact, the mass transit district in Champaign-Urbana has won recognition as one of the best mass transit districts in the whole country by a national organization of like highway and transportation professionals. And so for him to diss it like that, and of course, there's only three interstate highways that run through Champaign.
Yeah, and I, you know, as somebody, we were talking about this off air before we started taping the show, but I lived in Lundgren Hall when I was an undergraduate in Champaign-Urbana, and right there at the corner of 4th and Gregory in the middle of campus town near the six-pack, and I think just about every bus route in Champaign-Urbana went past my window, so I can personally attest that there is plenty of public transit in Champaign. Charlie, I also wanted to ask you about something that Mark mentioned, which is that people under the State House are not used to hearing apologies and sort of takebacks from this governor. Did that strike you as this is something relatively unusual here?
Yeah, the quickness of it and the fact that he did apologize, although he says, well, my remarks were taken out of context. We heard the clip of him actually saying this stuff at the beginning of the show, and it brought to mind, and this really does date me, Mayor Richard J. Daley, back in the day, he had a press secretary whose name was Earl Bush, and he once upon a time chided reporters, don't report what he says, report what he means. And so apparently you have to try and guess what the governor is trying to say when he actually says something. But yeah, it is. It's probably the first time he's been willing, certainly that quickly, to admit that, yeah, he put his foot in it.
And, you know, and this kind of sort of reminds me of J.B. Pritzker's apology tour in February with African-American communities after his racially charged statements that, you know, he made to then-Governor Rod Blagojevich back in 2008. And the conversations that were leaked, that's how we got, you know.
This is the wiretap recordings.
Right. Yeah. So Pritzker went around visiting churches in his effort to reach out to those black voters. And I remember he said something along the lines of, that was not my best self.
Yeah, of course, J.B. Pritzker needed black voters in the primary more than probably Governor Rauner needs a handful of, you know, voters who I think Champaign-Urbana city core is probably, you know, going to vote Democratic. I think there's even, heck, Urbana at one point and may still had a socialist person on their city council. So I don't think he's going to be winning a lot of votes there. But go ahead, Mark.
The funny thing about that, actually, is during the primary, if you look at the vote tallies, Champaign-Urbana gave Governor Rauner, if you split the map up geographically, the strongest support base he has in the entire state came from Champaign-Urbana and central Illinois at large. So that was the area that if they didn't carry him over the finish line, they certainly padded his lead in that close primary against Jeannie Ives. So I think this actually is an area of some moderate people. Yes, they'll vote Democratic sometimes, but these are also people that Governor Rauner has prided himself on connecting with downstate. And I think that may have also been one of the really big motivating factors fueling his apology tour.
Well, Governor Rauner is a person who is known for speaking very carefully. I think Mark and Daisy and I have all experienced that, trying to ask him questions. He's usually very precise and often will repeat himself. He doesn't speak off the cuff a lot, and I imagine that we're going to see him continuing to try and tighten up on that after, you know, these remarks caused such a flare-up. But somewhere else, another area of discussion where he's having to speak very carefully and sort of clarify and expound on his remarks relates to a man named Arthur Jones. Mark, can you remind our listeners, who is Arthur Jones?
Well, he's a 70-year-old perennial candidate. This guy from the 3rd Congressional District, which is sort of the southwest Chicago suburbs. There's this district, a congressional district, that Democrat Dan Lipinski has long held. I believe his own father actually used to sit in that same district. And he's sort of a conservative to moderate Democrat. He's pro-life. And anyways, the Republicans in this state have long sort of failed to organize and field candidates to cover the entire map. And in this year, heading into 2018, the Republicans couldn't find a candidate that they could put their, you know, full faith in to run against Dan Lipinski. And so what happened in that vacuum was that this guy managed to circulate enough petitions and get enough signatures to get on the ballot. Well, why is that important? Because this guy, Arthur Jones, used to head up a big Nazi group. He's an avowed racist, a white supremacist, an anti-Semite. And he openly states those, you know, horrid and twisted views that most Americans, if not all, you know, the overwhelming majority of Americans would find repulsive. And in his own words, talking to Politico's Natasha Kurecki, this Arthur Jones character says, "I snookered them," meaning he bamboozled the Republican Party and managed to slip in between the cracks and land on the ballot. And so now this is just, I mean, he's actually secured his position on the ballot. Nobody challenged his petitions. The Republican Party didn't run a third party candidate to oppose him. They still have until September find a write-in candidate and sort of mount that effort to oppose this Nazi running under the Republican banner, who will almost certainly lose in November. But it's a big headache for the Republicans. And during the governor's stop in Champaign-Urbana, we asked him a few questions. The Pritzker campaign was sort of needling him, saying that because the governor did not specifically call for Jones to drop out, that he was somehow cowering to this Nazi, and he was afraid to call him out. And the governor swatted those remarks down and said, "That's baloney. Of course he should drop out." But I asked, I said, "Are you endorsing Dan Lipinski, the Democrat, who is right now the only other official person on the ballot?" And he said, "Well, no, but he supports anybody else, and Jones should not be on the ballot." Well, saying no, that he wouldn't endorse the only other person on the ballot, as you might imagine, that set off a string of national political headlines saying Governor Rauner will not endorse a Democrat over a Nazi. And he clarified those remarks on Twitter, saying vote for anybody but the Nazi.
And this comes up in part because Ted Cruz, the U.S. Senator from Texas, former presidential candidate, tweeted late last week after this program went to air last week and said, "This is horrific, an avowed Nazi running for Congress. To the good people of Illinois, you have two reasonable choices, write in another candidate or vote for the Democrat. This bigoted fool should receive zero votes." So, I mean, this is the statement against which Governor Rauner's statements are being judged.
And if you talk to people close to the Rauner campaign, they're just a little bit annoyed at Ted Cruz for, you know, sort of taking a swipe at the low-hanging fruit, right? Like anybody, it doesn't take a lot of political courage to insult a Nazi. But he's in a race of his own, Ted Cruz is, and he has to try to win moderate voters in Texas who might be looking at Beto O'Rourke, as his opponent there. So Ted Cruz kind of sees that he fancies himself this social media star who says these funny quips and takes pictures of himself looking like Grayson Allen, the basketball player, and he tries to go viral as often as he can. But in doing so, in saying vote for anybody but the Nazi in Illinois, well, he kind of forced Governor Rauner into a bit of a corner. I think Politico said Governor Rauner breaks from Ted Cruz over Nazi candidate. And that was, according to one of Politico's own reporters, one of the most damaging headlines they've ever seen.
And I think this goes beyond just, you know, Rauner. Republicans across the board have denounced Jones. They've tried to distance themselves. But, I mean, the party overall did not, you know, they're criticized overall for not putting enough effort to get Jones out of the ballot. So, I mean, they lost, like Mark said earlier, many different opportunities to to get somebody else to run against him and to get a write-in candidate. So, I mean, can they really put this on the governor?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think you're right, Daisy. And I think there's sort of two levels that we can look at as and sort of parse here, maybe sort of a Talmudic interpretation, to use a turn of phrase that Mr. Jones would probably not like. But, you know, as we're looking at this, you can say, okay, is the governor denouncing him forcefully enough? And will the governor – I mean, I don't think the governor will ever be able to denounce him forcefully enough for the Pritzker campaign, because the Pritzker campaign hires a team of people to look for things to, you know, needle the Governor Rauner with constantly. But, Charlie, I want to turn to you. There's this other level that we can look at and say the sort of – as an institution, the Republican Party, which Governor Rauner, as you've pointed out, has basically made a subsidiary of his own personal political operation. He's certainly the largest funder of the Illinois Republican Party. Did the institution of the Illinois Republicans fail in this? You know,
I think they really did. I think the real embarrassment isn't the exact words that Rauner would use to condemn Arthur Jones. It's the fact that Arthur Jones is on the ballot as a Republican candidate in the first place. Had the Republican Party been on the ball, the folks would have noticed, hey, here's a congressional seat and we don't have a candidate yet. Let's find somebody who lives on the southwest side, southwest suburbs, who's willing to take one for the team. We're not going to beat Dan Lipinski. That's a given. But let's just fill that blank so some wacko doesn't sneak in and, to use Jones's terms, schnooker us. How hard would it be to get enough signatures on a petition? As a matter of fact, my guess is you could roundtable the petition, and nobody's—and roundtable is when you pass a petition around, literally around a table, and people sign names. Nobody's going to challenge it.
And Charlie, I mean, this is not a new phenomena in Illinois. I'm thinking back, and you certainly have a greater historical perspective than I do, but I can remember when Congressman Jesse Jackson had to face some guy named Jesse Jackson in his district in a Democratic primary. Or maybe it wasn't even in the primary. I don't remember which election it was. Certainly the LaRouches that got on the ballot in the 80s. I mean, there's a long tradition of this sort of chicanery in Illinois.
Oh, yeah. And the LaRouches, it was basically, again, the party organization, Democratic Party organization, at the grassroots level, just figured, oh, our slate is going to be okay. We don't have to go out and work for him. Now, in my particular precinct, we had a Democratic precinct committeeman who worked the precinct very hard, and the totals for that precinct between the slate of candidates and the two who lost to the LaRouches, George Sangmeister and Aurelia Puchinski, they were within one or two votes of the top of the ticket, who at the time was Alan Dixon. A lot of other places, people didn't vote for Sangmeister. Well, that's a foreign-sounding name. Puchinski, is she a communist? And instead they voted for the nice all-American Mark Fairchild for lieutenant governor, Janice Hart. What a great American name for Secretary of State. So it was a big embarrassment. And again, it was a party apparatus that failed at its basic function.
All right. Well, hopefully this is the last we're going to hear about Illinois Nazis, although I suspect that Mark or Daisy, whichever you pointed out, the deadline for write-in candidates will probably have another round of the Democrats trying to make some hay out of this later this year. But let's keep it with ballot discussions for now. We had another deadline passed this week. Last week, I think we were talking about State Senator Sam McCann, previously a Republican, now I guess a member of the Conservative Party, as well as the Libertarian candidate Grayson Cash Jackson, as he's now known, filing to run for governor. And there was a deadline to challenge their petitions this week. Mark, What happened there? I guess there's no news is good news if you're McCann and Jackson.
Well, it's a small victory for both of those third party candidates, in a different sense for each of them. But basically, it was an admission by omission that the Republican Party did not challenge either of their petitions. Was basically a wink and a nod, saying, "All right, you guys have done your basic homework. You've gathered enough valid legal petition signatures." And it became a question of resources for the Republican Party. They said, are we going to waste a bunch of time and money paying, you know, election lawyers to go chop up these signatures and challenge them and try to drag them through a potentially distracting battle, or just let it ride and focus on winning the campaign? the Republican Party said, there's enough valid signatures there. We're probably going to lose that fight anyways. Let's conserve our resources and just focus on the campaign. So with that happening, they basically just, you know, laid down their sword on that hill and are going to live to fight another day. But now there will be those four names, five, if you include Cass Jackson's original name, Benjamin Winderweedle, that will be on the ballot in November.
And I mean, Daisy, this is a bigger concern. Mark said the Republicans didn't challenge him because Pritzker would probably welcome more people on the ballot, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he said it in the past when McCann announced his third party run and Pritzker came out and said, hey, welcome to the team. And I think, you know, yeah, for Rauner, it could be a dent in his base.
Because you have this guy who's on there with, what, Conservative Party as the label, and Rauner's worried about his base.
Right.
And Mark, we also saw this week that McCann wants to get in on the debates. Do we know where the governor stands on that?
Well, that's a question of some interpretation. I asked the governor directly as he was wrapping up a press conference in Champaign-Urbana, should Cass Jackson and Sam McCann get a spot on the debate stage? And he just headed off. His press person had already said last question, and so you know how that goes.
Maybe for our listeners, we should say that more than any other politician I've ever covered in my entire career, Governor Rauner, when his person says last question, that is it. There is never going to be another question after last question. I think maybe once in 4 years of covering
him. I saw him break that protocol one time when somebody asked about his new granddaughter.
Exactly. I'm thinking of the exact same moment. Yes, exactly. But that is literally the only time, and since I guess 2013 is the first time I saw him. So in 5 years, that's the only time. So yes.
It's a funny art, though, right? Like at the end, when they're just walking away, you try to save a yes or no question for the end, where they can just easily like nod or say yes or no. And should these third-party candidates get a spot on the debate stage, Governor, yes or no? And repeated the question several times as he was very much within earshot, and he just walked out of the room. So the Pritzker campaign responded, said we welcome the voices on the stage. And again, that's because so far, at least for Sam McCann, we have only seen his guns, his political guns and ammunition, pointed at Governor Rauner. He said very little ill about J.B. Pritzker, and in fact, his first campaign video replayed many of Jeannie Ives' best hits and greatest hits from the primary. So he's going after the downstate county Republicans, maybe some of those same counties that have the gun sanctuaries, and he's trying to find the pro-life voter and peel them away from the Rauner voting block.
And getting some labor support to do it from the operating engineers, Local 150, which is a big typically you would think of as working with the Democrats, but also willing to sow mischief in the Republican Party when they can try to do that.
They basically spelled that out back in, I believe, October or November. They said, we intend to find a candidate, perhaps like McCann, to use labor to take Rauner down in November.
All right. Well, we've only got about 5 minutes left. Daisy, I want to ask you about the Janus decision. This was obviously the big topic last week. This week we saw the Democratic whip from the U.S. House, Steny Hoyer from Maryland, was in Chicago with some Illinois Democrats and labor leaders plotting what's next for Janus. What are the next steps?
Well, it's still very unclear for unions, for public employers, how do they navigate this new opinion, this new ruling? Right now, unions are saying we're not going to back down. We're going to continue fighting and pushing to get our members to continue believing in the unions. But one question that is still unclear and that could potentially lead to some litigation is how do public employers protect themselves? Do they completely stop collecting these union fair share fees from all non-union workers? Or how do they navigate the aspect of, well, if there is a non-union worker who wants to pay those fees, how do we navigate this now legal, lawfully consent? And there's also public employers could risk lawsuits from unions if they are too involved in trying to get workers to leave a bargaining unit. So it's still pretty unclear, but union leaders have said, we're moving forward, we're pushing, and we're going to continue fighting for this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that could be considered, an unfair labor practice if the employer gets a little too involved in that. Of course,
right.
we see Governor Rauner, you know, tried to bring this lawsuit in the first place himself and was told, you have no standing here. Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, and unions themselves, you know, now they have to prove that to their members that their membership dues and fees are worth it in the long run.
All right. We're going to the last thing I want to mention this week is Aaron Schock is back. And I'll just mention this briefly before we go to notes from the field. He's back in the news. He was talking to and he is, of course, on trial for federal corruption charges relating to his use of mileage reimbursements and how he paid for, you know, I guess the most what public and noticeable thing was how he had decorated his Washington, D.C., his official congressional office, sort of in the patterned after the style of Downton Abbey with a red room and these sort of, I don't know if you'd call them Gothic or Victorian touches after the PBS television show Downton Abbey. But anyways, he has requested another delay in his trial, I think the arraignment. I remember it was a very cold day, I believe in December of 2016, when he was first arraigned, and we are still waiting for that trial to happen. He now wants to take his case to the U.S. Supreme Court, contesting the way the government is going about prosecuting this case. I'm sure we will talk more about that at some point in the future if this ever does go to trial. Time now for notes from the field. We've got a pretty luxurious 25 seconds each. Mark Maxwell, begin with you.
If your kid is in an early childhood program funded by the state of Illinois, there may be some disruption on the horizon. The state, State Board of Education just recently informed some of these early childhood programs that have been funded for a while that their funding is running out if they didn't make the cut in this latest competitive scoring. So some money is being discontinued at some of these different early childhood programs and being redirected to other more successful, if you will, programs. So that came as some surprising news to several different school districts, especially in rural areas that some say need that money the most.
Daisy Contreras.
Yes. 26 Illinois counties have passed so-called gun sanctuary resolutions, playing on the phrase sanctuary cities, where political and law enforcement leaders limit their cooperation with federal immigration policies. Gun sanctuary advocates say they also need and deserve that protection. The question is this lawful?
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the University of Illinois' J. Ferd Geertz has come out with the Flash Index for June, and it shows that Illinois' economy is still experiencing modest growth in the context of an unusual stable economy, according to Professor Geertz. And on another note, we ended FY18, the fiscal year that ended June 30th, with an increase in our base general fund revenue of roughly $9 billion. 2% from what the February forecast was.
And if you subtract out, they say the federal sources are very volatile. But basically, the bottom line is that the legislative and the governor's budget offices came within 1 percentage point. Pretty good forecasting for making those numbers. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, and Mark Maxwell of WCIA Television. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.